Stampede Blue. What we talking about? Indianapolis, AFC South. Stampede Blue, let's air it out. Fly route, let's air it out. Topics, loaded like offense. Colt-centric, talk about it often. Stampede Blue, let's air it out. Fly route, let's air it out. Do it big.
Welcome back to another Stampede Blue Colts cast, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Matt Dainley. And today we are going to look through the 2017 NFL draft class for the Indianapolis Colts. We're going to talk about some of those guys that just didn't get on the field. A couple of guys who did get on the field didn't really have the production value that most fans were hoping for. And we're going to kind of discuss this group because 2018 seems to be a real pivotal season for this group. Not to mention they've got the rookies in there now who they're going to have to coincide with. They've got some of the veterans they're going to have to coexist with as well. And this is going to have to be an important group for this defense to really take the next step forward. And to help me with that, we got Connor Rogers from Bleacher Report and Stick to Football. How you doing, Connor? Thank you for joining us.
Oh, I'm good. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Glad to get this. I caught a little bit of your guys' conversation, you and Matt's, on the podcast the other day. And I thought, man, I have been waiting to talk about this with somebody. And I heard you mention it a little bit. And I was like, I'm going to reach out to him and see if he's interested in running this down. So it's a fun draft class. We talked about this a little bit off air. It just wasn't a group that had the production value. They just didn't give us the, the real, this is exactly what we're going to see. We didn't get a 16 game season out of a bunch of them.
Yep.
So that's kind of the real problem with what the Colts have right now. There's a lot of, we see a lot of the excitement behind this group. We see the potential from Quincy Wilson. We see it from Hooker. We like that Terrell Basham is in a system that he is going to, at least something that he came out of Ohio playing and had familiarity with. Outside, of the 3-4 from last year, he's back into a 4-3 kind of just go forward scheme here with the Tampa 2 and Matt Eberflus's scheme. So let's start with Malik Hooker. Out with the injury last year, he showed what he could do in pass coverage a little bit, that he is kind of that ball hawk here. But when we look at the Tampa 2 style defense, Connor, what is something that kind of sticks out to you for Malik? I mean, it makes sense to probably the casual observer and anybody else for that matter as well, that if you have a guy who's sitting back there and is supposed to be a ball hawk and supposed to be the single high safety and can cover the whole field with his instincts and speed, is this going to make it easier for him covering a two deep field?
Oh, without a doubt. And I think it also improves the Colts in the areas where they might not be a team anymore that you want to look to push the ball down the field on. When you look at Hooker last year, I mean, it stinks that he got hurt after not even really half of a season, but he had interceptions in half of his starts. He had 3 picks and 6 starts and still, 4 passes defense. So a lot of what we loved about him at Ohio State translated to the next level, and that's his range, his athleticism to always be around the ball. And more importantly for a younger player, the IQ, and I mean a former basketball player, the IQ, the football IQ, to know where to be. So I think we saw a lot of that, and it was really exciting. And now as you look at, what's going to be technically a new defensive scheme in Indy for him, you hope that all-ball production increases or even stays the same, because if you map it out over a full season, this is a guy that would have been one of the top, leaders in interceptions last year and making a play on the ball. So, and more important thing for him too, and we're going to talk about Quincy, is he's a guy that can really help your corners out. When you have your corners, you can let them be physical up front because you have somebody that reliable over the top. It changes everything. I mean, you look at who he played with at Ohio State, Marshawn Lattimore, Gerrion Conley, obviously Denzel Ward was waiting in the wings, and they still got a couple good ones back this year with Kendall Sheffield. So he's a guy that's always made corners around him better. And while those were good players in their own right, Hooker's somebody that can really change a defense because of his versatility and because of his ability to get the ball back to the offense at any given moment.
Now, he's going to have a little bit of an issue coming back from the injury, of course, and it may take him a little bit longer. They were questioning basically his week one viability. But at the moment, when you look at this group as a whole, as far as production value, you really couldn't ask for more from a guy with the limited amount of games that he played. As you mentioned, if he played a full season, he would have been up there with the league leaders in interceptions. Is there anything that you see as maybe something that we should maybe pump the brakes on him? Or is it basically you kind of saw a glimpse of what you're going to see from now on from Malik Hooker? He was a little more physical than he was given credit for, I think, coming out of the draft. and fans liked that, because that was the first knock that Colts fans continued to hear after the Colts drafted him at 15th overall. But really, I think that a lot of people really kind of get what Malik Hooker brings to the table, even though his season was cut short.
And without a doubt, he flies to the ball. And it's funny how narratives work before the draft, because you're 100% right. The question was, is this guy that can come downhill, take on contact, and make a play against the run? And I don't think that was the problem. He threw his body around and really had some big hits. But it's really coming to balance and making the smart tackle sometimes is what we want to see out of him, being a disciplined tackler, because you don't always need to go for the kill shot, especially when you're as talented as you are, as Malik Hooker is. He's a guy that he does throw his body around, and clearly it has taken a toll on him. He's got great length. I think he could even really fill out a little bit more. And like I said, a younger prospect, so still a lot of time there. Now, coming back from surgeries, it does take time to put on a little bit more of that muscle mass at the next level. But I think he's someone naturally and physically that's just very gifted. And I think I'm not really worried about the on-field product. Is he going to be aggressive and miss tackles? Yes, a lot of great safeties in the NFL do. I mean, being local here in New York, we saw it with the Jets last year. Jamal Adams had a fantastic rookie season as well, and he missed tackles. It's just as simple as that. These guys, they love to have their nose around the ball and make a play. And when that much good is on the table, it outweighs that little bit of bad of just being a reckless player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that people are excited for Malik Hooker. We kind of initially thought last year that when Pagano would be gone, that the new scheme would probably be closer to a Seahawks, a Falcons, a little more cover three involved, because of who they drafted, because of the secondary that they brought in. But it turns out that it's going to be cover two, and I think, or a little more cover two, Tampa two, a little different there with the middle linebacker. The mic and his responsibilities in that. But it's a fun thing to think about when you think about a guy who is expected to cover the whole field, and now he's got, you know, a little bit less of that responsibility ahead of him. So I think that people can pretty much guess what we've got out of Hooker. Now let's talk about that middle linebacker. Through OTAs, Anthony Walker was placed at Mike. He's a guy who didn't get a ton of games in last year also, but I mean, he had played the better part of the season, I guess. But he's a really kind of a raw guy. They talked about him, about how his coverage drops with his weight gain, but his physicality drops with his weight loss. So he was a guy who kind of had some positives and negatives, some very clear positives and negatives with his body composure, or that's not the right word, composition.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts about him? Do we really know what he got? Because he did play at the beginning of the year, and then he kind of was relegated off to a bit of a special teams guy after that.
Yeah, that's exactly what I expected him to, being a late day three pick. The Anthony Walker, you know, rise and peaks and valleys of his career at Northwestern was so interesting, because this was a player they had so much faith in over there that they had deemed him the franchise. And for a college linebacker in the Big Ten to be called that, it really does mean something. And what really jumped out the page for me with him was his instincts, especially as a run stopper. I thought he was physical coming downhill when he plays heavier. But like you said, when he's lighter and you maximize his ability in coverage, it might take away some of that ability to come downhill, fill the hole, take on blocks. So what do you want him to be is what I want to know from the Colts. Do you want him to be a guy that maybe plays a little lighter and is a sub-package player, a nickelbacker that can run and cover and be your special teams demon? Or do you want this guy to be a first and second down Mike backer that can fill the hole and really have good instincts, and someone that really, as a former captain, has the leadership to be up there up front? The Colts are a young team still, and they're going through a lot of turnover right now. I mean, they just took Darius Leonard. There's going to be young faces up front. You mentioned Basham. We just talked about Hooker on the back end and Quincy. There's a lot of young faces around. Now, just because Anthony Walker was a rookie last year, this is a guy with a lot of experience on the field. So I would like to see him in there on first and second down and making the checks at the line and getting everybody lined up and being the leader he was at Northwestern and improving this run defense and making teams get to third and longs and throw the ball on you because you have your ball hawk on the back end that could change the game at any moment. That's what you want to do if you're the Colts, setting teams up. Now, they can build a pass rush down the line, but you're building a foundation in place, and you do need somebody up front to do that. And as we've seen the league really turn into, you know, a mix of spread concepts and RPOs and all of this, there's not a lot of defensive players in the NFL that are 100% on the field all the time, really, at the linebacker position. They're very interchangeable. Some guys playing first and second down, some guys being nickel and dime backers, even strong safeties being moved down into the box. So when you look at Walker, my biggest thing for him is with the team, I want to see them give him an identity and give him a chance to succeed. Just because he was a fifth round pick does not mean this guy cannot take on majority snaps, because I definitely think he can.
Yeah, and I think that Boward really loved him too. I mean, I guess that it kind of goes with fit. How does Eberflus feel that he really rolls in there? Because they definitely need that standalone Mike linebacker, like you mentioned. They need a guy who can drop into coverage. And that's in this Tampa 2 scheme, he's heavily reliant to do that.
Yes.
He's going to be heavily relied upon to do that. And that's something that this not only that the team needs, but as you mentioned, their lack of experience with this group. This is one of the other reasons that I thought it was necessary to talk about this group. Yes, they didn't get a lot of playing time, but with their age, their average age of this roster plummeting, going from one of the oldest in the league now to one of the younger ones. I think they're in the bottom two or three in the league now. At least they were before the draft. This group has to show out, and it's going to be really interesting. And him playing 10 games last year, but only starting two of them, is going to be something that he's going to have to build upon. And I think that that's a really interesting. You made some great points with him, and he's one of the guys that's a little overlooked in this draft class as well. I think a lot of people have kind of forgotten about him. You know, when you look at Wilson and Hooker and Basham, a lot of people are kind of forgetting about what he could potentially bring and how much the Colts actually like him. So let's move on to Quincy Wilson here. Now, he played in 7 games last year, only started 5, had some good coverage snaps, did a good job getting his hand on the ball. We saw that he had the recovery ability to get deep with his receiver. And when we saw a couple times, especially in the Arizona game, where both he and Hooker were on the ball as it was arriving to the receiver. So Quincy, people said that he arrived last year to camp a little underprepared. This year, it seems like he could get the opportunity he's needing and that the Colts need him to get and really excel at, because last year the coaching staff kept him out of some games. He was injured for a few, but all in all, with an interception, he only ended up having 22 tackles on the season. This is a big year for him, not only to prove that he's got the ball skills to really be either a one or a 1A boundary corner, or that he can become that physical guy that a Tampa 2 scheme really needs him to be.
Yeah, and when you look at the NFL nowadays, if you're a top 50 pick, you're expected to make an impact within the 2-year window, or else there's a good chance that teams are going to be looking to replace you quite quickly. So like you said, for Quincy this year, the clock is ticking to come in and be a starter, not just be a guy that, is in nickel and dime packages. This should be a number one or number two corner, and I fully expect him to take on that role. He was one of my favorite corners in that draft last year. He was a top 5 corner for me in a very, very good class that had Marshawn Lattimore, Sidney Jones, Gerrion Conley, his teammate, Tease Tabor. The list really goes on, and he was someone that showed he had a very, very specific skill, and that was being a press corner at the line of scrimmage. He can bump and run. The biggest question for him was, can he turn his hips and get downfield? And now in the Tampa 2 scheme, I think he's going to be protected, and it kind of maximizes his ability at the line of scrimmage to disrupt wide receivers' routes and be a little more of an aggressive player up front. Now, I don't know how aggressive the Colts are going to want to be with the Tampa 2. They might look to be a bend but don't break, but Quincy's one of the guys that'll actually get up in your face and say, I'm not going to let you off the line of scrimmage very easily. So I think when he came into camp, he's a very confident player. He's always been like that since he got to Florida. He felt he was the best corner in that class. If you're not a very confident corner, you don't last long in the NFL. So that was another thing that I loved about the player. And I think it does take time to get up to speed. And some staffs truly don't like throwing rookie corners into the fire right away with how complicated passing schemes and how big of an adjustment it could be covering NFL wide receivers. So they maybe wanted to give him some time to get ready. And I think there was a lot of good flashes from him. I could actually make the argument, out of all the picks, some of his best last year was the best of that draft class they took. And obviously you can make the same case for Hooker, who made a lot of big plays. But with Quincy, I think you can get a consistency in coverage that's much needed long-term throughout the game. He's a guy that you don't want to hear his name called. You'd rather beat the quarterback looking the other way because he's running in the hip pocket of the wide receiver, or like I said, blowing them up at the line of scrimmage, which he can do often.
Okay, so when we look at the difference, like I said, last year we kind of figured that it was maybe they were heading towards more of a heavy cover 3 type look at that defense with Wilson's press ability and his man ability, and obviously Hooker on the back end. But now with this Tampa 2, is he well built, I guess, is the right way to ask it, to be that click and close guy who can close on a pass in maybe a more heavily zone coverage scheme?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, because coming out, that's not really how you would draw up the report, right? You would look at him and say, just like his teammate Tease, you're like, you want these guys to be really bump and run, like I said, in the hip pocket, match and mirror kind of players. Now, you look at it now, does it mean he can't do it? No, we don't necessarily know that, but it's going to be interesting to see how he's used. Are they going to actually maybe move him around and like him against move tight ends and all kinds of things like that, where, hey, you know what, maybe he's better suited on the inside here and there. I think they're going to play him on the outside, and I am interested to see how he can benefit from his own. The one thing I will say it does a lot, a big question with him was, how is his downhill speed or down the field speed, like I said, really opening up and running? This protects him from that. So I think, like anything else, there's a give and take. You know, when you look at zone corners, it's one of those things where you want them to be able to read the eyes of the quarterback and make a play on the ball. Now, Quincy can definitely do that. So there's just a give and take with everything. You don't like losing some of his best ability, which is being so physical. But at the same time, I do think he's a player with enough talent to adjust.
Another corner, as we get into the rest of this class, was Nate Hairston, who really got a lot of playing time. It's played in 14 games at that nickel role, and that was really key for the Colts last year, not only to get a rookie in really good shape, but to also get a rookie who's in really good shape, getting a lot of playing time, that also allowed Darius Butler to kick back to safety quite a bit throughout the year, as he was their typical nickel guy. What do you see from him in a scheme like this, and being able to go forward with all the experience he got last year? Had a couple sacks, had an interception, close to 35 tackles, or right at 35 tackles, actually. Really was a guy who proved that he could rush off the edge there in that nickel role, could handle his own in coverage, and just really kind of found himself another guy who just really wasn't expected to offer much and really offered quite a bit.
Well, I think the versatility from Temple, and it's funny, a lot of these Temple guys are all molded the same way with versatility. We saw it with Hassan Reddick. We saw it this year. I believe Julian Taylor. So you look at these Temple guys, they could do usually so many different things, whether any part they play in the defense. And with Harrison, you do like that he can really fly off the edge and make a play. But I think when you look at a team that just had 11 picks in a draft, and I don't think they used a single one on cornerback, it does speak volumes that maybe they liked what they saw from this defensive backs group, or at least in practice. Because like you said, they didn't start every single game. Hooker got hurt. And when you look at Quincy, you know, came on a little late. But it kind of shows you that, okay, we got some production from these guys, maybe a little, or especially him, a little earlier than what we expected from his draft slot, where he said, okay, in a corner-heavy class that we just had, it speaks volumes that they're comfortable going into the season and giving this guy a significant role again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's one of the guys that I think that we're really interested to see what he does, because I think that they liked it early in camp last year. They were playing him man, and they were playing him outside as a boundary corner. So we kind of thought, wow, is this going to be, you know, the guy that, you know, he and Wilson are going to be battling for that?
And but I think he did that at Temple too.
Yeah, and then they kicked him inside, and it really worked out for him. So he's a guy who is going to have a very a large role, in my opinion, in this new scheme. And I think that they're going to really use him to get off of the edge. He was so successful at it last year. He only had 2 sacks, but I'll bet he had closer to 10 hurries and probably about 5 to 6, maybe even 7 or 8.
Career rushing.
Yeah, he did a pretty nice job off of that. So continuing with the Colts' heavy defensive draft of last year, let's go to the defensive line and talk about the first of a couple guys that are obviously of note. But Grover Stewart, a guy who was definitely not someone on a lot of people's radar last year.
Kind of
looks and fits as far as body type, more of a 3-4 two gap scheme type guy, but the Colts really loved the explosion that he showed, and he definitely has that. He didn't have a monster role last year. He did ended up getting somewhere around 20 to 25 tackles last year. He played in 15 games, so he got a lot of experience. But now he's going to be expected to take that next step especially if he's going to make the roster. I mean, I presume he will. I just mean that this defensive line that Chris Ballard and the coaching staff have put together, they've got a lot of guys in there. They want to rotate 8 guys along this defensive line and try to keep everybody fresh. He's one of the bigger guys, if not the biggest guy outside of Al Woods on this roster. What does he bring to this Katie bar the door type front seven approach for this scheme?
Well, it's going to be interesting to watch his role because they've moved on from, you know, Hankins, obviously, and Henry Anderson is out the door now to the Jets. So clearly with Grover, it's a guy that, like you said, he almost plays at 340. I know he's listed around like 330. He is gigantic. And, you know, coming out of D2 with Albany State, your expectations might have been a little low. And he actually filled it in a role on the rotation of the defensive line. And I think he's somebody that will plug on the inside again, right? You said he kind of projects as that 3-4 defensive end, 4-3 defensive tackle, a guy that can really control his gaps. And I think that's the discipline you want to see from him this year. When you look at it, his snaps could probably double in all, you know, with the opportunity that will be presented with him. Like I said, all those moving parts. Now, the Colts are a team, a lot of young faces on the defensive line. He's another guy that's under 25 years old. This is only year number 2 for him, D2 school. So you want to see him be able to shut down the run. I think you'd like to be able to see him even work between the gaps a little more. I don't expect him to ever be some interior upside pass rusher, but at the same time, you really want to see discipline. You don't want to see this team that's allowing a lot of interior run stopping. Like I said, bend, don't break. And I think, once again, he fits in that role up front as a tougher player, as a bigger player, and somebody that can really control the trenches is what you want to see. Use your weight. Win at the point of attack. You're that size, and he's not a fat, sloppy guy at that size. Right. What's impressive with him is more of an athletic guy that, you know, really should not lose at the point of attack in between the gaps. So I'm excited to watch the kind of steps he makes, because it goes back to the theme of this show right now, right? Malik would have been different because Malik would have played all year. It's just an unfortunate injury. But you look at Quincy, you're going to see it with Basham this year. You're going to see it with Harrison. These guys aren't going to just be rotational role players anymore. They all have a chance to be 70%, 80% kind of snaps guys now. And he's one of the key ones, because you shed a ton of salary when you lose Hankins, and you have someone like this that's on, you know, the lowest of low dollars that might almost give you what you hope is similar production and reliability.
Right. Absolutely. And he just seems to be a guy who really fits with, like, they brought in, Toure, obviously he's going to be a guy who's going to be moved around quite a bit. Tyquan Lewis is going to be an interesting one. And I think we're still debating his role. Yes, he was considered an edge guy or defensive end. I really feel like, and many of us really feel like, they're really going to kick him inside and try to use his explosion, similar to what they'll probably try to use in Stewart, to get that young, explosive guy who can really break up the pocket immediately from the interior. Because that, to me, when I watched Tyquan Lewis pre-draft, that was where I felt he was going to be most impressive in the NFL. I didn't see him as a guy who was going to come off the edge and dominate doing that. I felt like he was a guy who really seemed, against interior offensive linemen, like he could create some mismatches. So I think that they're really hoping to see that from Stewart as well. It's an important offseason. It's an important preseason for him. He really has to prove his worth, or maybe he won't miss the roster, but his snap count could come down significantly. Let's talk a little bit more about Terrell Basham, a guy who comes out not in a scheme he's ever played in last year in that 3-4-2 gap. Now he's in, basically he says he's home. This is where, you know, he makes his money. This is where he's supposed to be. Played 15 games last year, really didn't have a ton of production, 7 tackles total, 2 sacks, and those were towards the end of the season. Didn't flash much at all in the first half of the season. This is a guy who has to come out balls on fire.
I mean, without a doubt, and I think you kind of nailed it, where it's weird to me to draft a player like this when you're running a 3-4, because it takes away everything that made him so fun to watch while at Ohio. He was someone that, when you let him pin his ears back and you let him shoot gaps and you let him really just try to get down the field after the quarterback and disrupt the run in the backfield, disrupt the passer in the backfield, he was very good at that. I thought I liked the athlete. I liked the instincts, and I liked the get off the snap. when you put him in a 3-4, I felt like it took away a lot of those things and just made him, you know, a mediocre player. And that's a mediocre rookie season, like you said. And, absolutely, you know, this is not a day three, like, gamble kind of pick. This was somebody with legitimate expectations, fell just out of the top 75. So I expect to see the Terrell Basham of old this year, and you'll know really quickly by what they ask him to do, because when you look at who they just drafted, right, they have a twitchy, bendy kind of guy in Kamiko Ture, and then you have Tyquan Lewis, who, which you alluded to. I think he has strong hands and a lot of good strength in his lower body in general to really kick inside, especially on third and longs, to try to give guards a little more fits there rather than kicking out all the way to the edge. With Basham, it's something in between, where I think that when you look at the 4-3, he's going to be on the field on those early downs. He's not just going to be some pass rush specialist. He's a guy that you expect to shut down the run. But this is the scheme that's tailored to his strengths and what he does. So it's funny how it works. Ballard took him maybe knowing that maybe it wasn't for long what they were working with and that he'd have a better future down the road. And you never really know, but it's just good to see that now he's in a scheme that he's supposed to be in, because this is not a 3-4 defensive end kind of player.
Absolutely. And, you know, we'll kind of mention this, but the one pick that we haven't talked about that we're not going to talk about before we get to Marlon Mack was Zach Banner. Yep. It was a complete and total flop. Bad pick. A lot of people called that out, myself included. And without that doubt, wasn't something that this offensive line could help or use going forward. They cut him. While we see the negative of that was a terrible pick, we also have to offer the positive there and say good on Chris Ballard for getting rid of him before, you know, and not being a typical, maybe not quite typical, but not being a guy who's a GM who's going to just go in there and say, nope, I drafted him, he's going to play. You know, that doesn't help anybody at all. And so
it takes away reps from players that can actually potentially help you down the line. And I think Banner showed that physically he was limited. And it's funny to say that about a guy that's 6'9 and the size of a house, but physically he was limited. I mean, and the bigger problem too with Banner is technically it never got better. And it didn't seem to get that way in college. It didn't seem to get that way in a very, very short NFL stint with the Colts. So move on. And I think they took two actually good offensive linemen this year and making up for a little bit of a mistake last year.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely. So let's finish this off the individual section here real quick of the show with Marlon Mack. Offered quite a bit last year, played in 14 games, 358 rushing yards, 225 receiving, ran the ball 93 times, had some nice gains. There was I can't remember the stat now, and I probably should have had that off the jump. But there was something to where he was one of the very few running backs in there to where he touched the ball and he had the most 20-yard touchdown runs or something of the sort in the first half of the season already. So his explosion, his big playability is well on its way to showing itself. In the preseason, he made me extremely excited about what he has the potential to do between the tackles. We saw a nice hole get made. He makes a guy miss in the hole. And that's something I thought, man, if he can do that during the season, he is the full package. He's the whole thing.
Yep.
And he just didn't really do that. Now, the offensive line was absolute garbage. The line has improved. He definitely is a guy who can beat anybody almost to the edge and break something outside. But he's got a lot of refinement that he has to do with catching the ball, making some of those yards between the tackles. He's not a small guy, is quick and as explosive as he is, and kind of seen as that change of pace, almost scat back type of look to what people see in him. But he's got a lot to prove, and he has the ability, in my opinion, to become that all-around back this year. He might be one of the guys that has the most expectations from Colts fans. What are you seeing in him?
I loved the flashes, and I think the biggest question when we look at NFL coaches and rookie running backs is, can they protect our quarterback as well? Can we rely on them in pass protection? So like you said, a lot of rounding that he really needs to do. He needs to tailor his game, because athletically, and we've seen a million guys like this, you know, fizzle out in the NFL – it looks great. I mean, getting to the outside and shooting up the field, you know he can do that. He's a big play threat, and I do think he has the frame to actually be this team's, you know, primary running back. Now, it's interesting, you take Nyheim Hines, and that doesn't sit here and tell me, oh, you know, this is they're not comfortable with Marlon Mack as a feature, because Hines is a speedster. He's a track guy. He's a guy that is really going to be, you know, you'd like to work him in on third down, maybe even two back sets if you do get creative with him. But he's not someone like a Saquon Barkley, a Darius Geis, Kerryon Johnson that's trying to unload the starting running back. So, you know, Jordan Wilkins is a really interesting name on this roster that I actually think could be a better NFL player compared to the, you know, what happened with him in college. But when you look at Mack in a nutshell, the point of all of this is that it's there for the taking. Now go do it, because you should be somebody getting the ball 20 times a game, whether that's 15 carries and five targets or even more. You have the opportunity to do this in this offense now, and you have two guards in front of you where the excuses are over. Quentin Nelson, to me, has all-pro talent. Everybody knows that. There's no limitations on his game, no matter what you ask him to do. But Braden Smith's another guy that really athletically can get out in front and help you get downhill for the explosive plays. Not the 4 to 5 yard runs, but the 8 to 12 to 15 yard runs, which Mack is very capable of. Now, he needs to be very smart. He needs to show that he has the right vision to execute in this offense, because – like we said, there are guys behind him, but this is really his for the taking right now. And this is a player that should be a 1,000-yard back, should be your primary running back, and should be more reliable as a pass protector and a guy that you can really throw the ball to on third downs as a safety blanket for, you know, whoever starts the year out at quarterback. But Andrew Luck, we know how much he can extend plays. That would really help Mack in the passing game as well. So my expectations for him are, now that the door is open, he should be the guy to go take it. And there's not really anyone very close on his heels with the two rookies.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm excited about I'm excited about this rookie class as I am about the 2017 class coming in and all of them kind of meshing together. I think this is going to be a really fun group to watch. With Andrew Luck coming back, he is going to expedite some of that. So we may not actually have the real real nuts and bolts, I guess, of what this team is made of with Andrew Luck covering up as many warts as he does. But he is going to give that group, these two groups actually, time to grow together. And I think that this has some potential to really help the growth of the roster, help Chris Ballard with bringing these guys in. And I think it's going to help this group mesh over the next couple years and probably give them, maybe possibly a little bit more success than actually the talent roster wide would suggest. So it's a fun group to watch. I'm really excited about this group. I'm excited about this 2017 group that we've been talking about today. So let me ask you this. What, with everything involved, with the group getting younger, the roster getting younger, this group with the expectations that we have, because the one thing that we've talked about, there's just not a lot of evidence from the 2017 group of what they can actually do. A lot of expectations, not a ton of what we will see. Nothing out of the rookie class, obviously. We know what the rest of the roster looks like. And with an Andrew Luck back under center this year, how important do you see this 2017 group as to help expedite the success maybe of the roster itself and of the team going forward, with the AFC South obviously bolstering some of their quality of play in the rosters themselves? So it's not the AFC South of old. How much of a difference can this 2017 group make?
Yeah, well, you'd hope, number one, that this is the group that starts to lay the foundation for the turnover of the roster, right? If you can get a starting corner and what you hope is a premier safety and maybe one or two starting pieces, or at least pieces of the rotation for the defensive line, and maybe you do have a linebacker that's at least a two-down player up front, Anthony Walker, that's a lot of pieces. I always say, if you get two starters out of a draft class, you did pretty damn good. A lot of people forget how high the fail rate is, especially round by round. So when you look at the Colts here, you know, the 2018 class, I feel like, has a lot of locks. Quentin Nelson and Braden Smith being two of them, and Hines definitely being a player that's going to impact the game in a couple ways. But 2017, with all the question marks, is on the field, I don't really have questions about Hooker besides staying healthy. That's the biggest thing for me. I think Quincy, like we said, adjusting to the scheme is going to be something to keep an eye on. How does his skill set really adjust to that scheme? While Basham, on the other hand, is like plug and play. It's a seamless transition. That'll be a very good thing for him and just overall for the coaching staff to have a guy like that. So the Colts are an interesting spot, because you have a quarterback coming back that has played at a top five level before. We've seen him put the team on his back and carry them, whether it's to the playoffs or throughout those games. And that changes everything because we've seen quarterbacks in this league carry, you know, rosters that are not top 15 rosters into the top 10 of the NFL. So the Colts are one of those teams where the roster still needs to really lay this foundation and prove that Ballard did get a couple starters in that first class and maybe some impact players in this most recent class. And then you really start to turn the tides toward 2019 after another free agency period, another draft where they got extra picks. You got the Jets second rounder for 2019. That could be a very valuable chip if you want to maybe move up and get another impact player. Because while the Colts roster has a lot of question marks, if Andrew Luck plays, this isn't a team that should be picking in the top five. It's as simple as that. The teams in the division still have questions around them. Jacksonville has probably the best roster on paper in the NFL. Blake Bortles is still an awful, awful, you know, starting quarterback in this league. Tennessee is going through a transition phase. There's a lot to like. There's a lot to question. And when you look at Houston, that team's going to ride or die on the health of Deshaun Watson, which has been playing like roulette lately. And I love the player. I thought he was the best quarterback in that class, but his health is really a game of roulette right now. So the Colts window is interesting because it's really just starting to get going. And it'll be really nice if it's accelerated by a healthy return of Andrew Luck, but it doesn't have to be just yet. So it all starts like we just talked about, the 2017 class. Lay a foundation with a couple starting pieces and keep this thing moving.
Absolutely. And just hope that this 2018 group can offer, hope that they don't have to start a bunch or play a ton, but hope that they can be a complimentary group for them as well. So that'd be really exciting. So, Connor, thank you for joining me. I think you've answered a lot of my questions. You've answered a lot of Colts fans' questions, and we appreciate it. Thank you guys all for watching, whether you're watching or listening on the podcast. Either way, thank you guys. Continue to go to Apple Podcasts and rate and review the show. Thank you guys all again for listening. You guys are great. Continue to show it. Continue to subscribe to the channel. It's growing, and it's all because of you guys. So thank you all very much for that. Connor, again, fantastic guest today. Thank you so much for your time.
No, anytime. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you guys all for watching. We'll talk to you next time right here on the Colts Cast. Stampede Blue.